You're listening to Finding Your Genius Zone with Dirk Novell. With the help of successful individuals across industries, Dirk breaks down the unknown parts of every vocation while highlighting the importance of finding a career where you can leverage your natural skills, passions, and interests. Now here's your host, Dirk Novell.
Everybody, this is Dirk Novell. Welcome to my podcast. On with me today is Matt Gerlach. Matt, welcome.
Hey, good to meet you.
Yeah, man. It's all right. We kind of haven't really known each other that long, to be honest. So I think that's a really natural response. Matt is a guy that came to me through a mutual friend, and I think it was a brand event that you attended. And that's kind of interesting because that's a lot of your background in which we'll get into. But I've really enjoyed kind of talking to Matt. You know, my podcasts sometimes are all very focused on the career. I think this one's going to be a lot about just kind of advice and kind of some life experiences that maybe, you know, if you're young and you're kind of battling with what you want to do and maybe you feel held back, I think a lot of Matt's advice and words are going to be helpful. So, Matt, why don't we just kind of start off just so the audience kind of has a good idea of like your background. I think you're around 40. You've been in, you know, you went to school in California, lived in San Diego, you went to New York, and now you're back to California. Tell the audience a little bit about what it is you've been doing and maybe kind of what your expertise is.
Sure, I'd love to. Great to meet you all. So my career has been an interesting one, and my story has been an interesting one in getting closer and closer to one where my career is aligned with my desires, with my zones of genius. And so when I graduated college, I went to UC Riverside, got a degree in business administration, and got a job selling metal. So it was very interesting, something I didn't even know existed. And I sold metal for the world's the country's biggest metal distribution company. We sold like to contractors, to machinists, to sign makers, all around. The government was a big customer of ours. I did that for a while, and then in 2010, decided to move to New York, and I completely switched my career. I was 27 years old and I've been a rock star metal salesman, and I went the exact opposite route and landed up in baby product sales. So I was selling these high-end baby products. It was a relatively new market, and I was selling these to retailers throughout the globe. I managed domestic, international business. I did that for a few companies. And I ended up starting my consulting business, which is helping small, medium, baby product companies with their growth strategies and management and ongoing leadership and execution of growth in the wholesale channel. So that's what I've been doing for the past 7 years, owning my own consulting business. And it's been quite an interesting ride. I've driven this towards extreme success. I have made over $1 million a year a couple of these past years in my business. And it's been largely because I faced a traumatic episode when I started the business. And I started having some health problems. I was diagnosed with high blood pressure, ended up spending a couple of days in the hospital because I thought I was dying of a heart attack, was discharged. And after that, I started having panic attacks while I was driving, which really sent me on this healing journey where I realized there was undiagnosed, unrealized childhood trauma that had been holding me back most of my life and was presenting itself. I'm a big Oprah fan, and she says that wake-up calls will keep happening and happening until someone finally does something about it and listens. And I think she says something like, it'll just keep knocking you upside the head until you finally listen. And that's what happened. So I went on this healing journey, and just my life has completely changed. I don't feel anxious or depressed, and I'm moving into more of a career of authenticity and exploring my zone of genius. So
I love it. I want to get it. The trauma stuff, let's get into in a little bit. I think that's, we talked about that before I hit record. And I think there's a lot of stuff that in all of us maybe holding us back. And when you're talking about Oprah and kind of the just hitting you in the head until you figure it out, like, I think that's really an interesting conversation as well, because I think a lot of people, and this is what I'm trying, Matt, to avoid, is people getting into a job and getting handcuffed, golden handcuffs, jobs they hate, and that's just too damn hard to get out of. And like, I know a lot of people in careers that don't like what they do. And, you know, it's like they keep getting these signs and, you know, you were brave enough to kind of do something about it. And so what maybe we can do is shed a little lighter advice to younger people before they have to go through some of this, or maybe people that have had trauma that might need a little clear insight into kind of where they should go in terms of a career. But getting back to your baby, how the heck did you get into the, like, were you just like online and I'm looking for outside sales jobs and baby products came up, or did you have an affinity towards that niche?
Definitely no affinity towards the baby product niche. I just went where the wind blew career-wise. You know, and I am very passionate about helping young adults and even medium and older adults find a career of their dreams. And, you know, I mean, we spend most of our time at work, as everyone's heard millions of times over. And it's really important that we spend that time doing something we enjoy. My story was one of which I didn't know that. I mean, I heard it, but it didn't seem like it was possible for me. One of the things that held me back in life was I grew up with this like financial trauma. I think a lot of us may have something similar where we just like were at a disadvantage in terms of believing that the world was abundant, that unless we were suffering through something, we weren't like, that's what the rite of passage for work was. Work is not supposed to be fun. And I mean, my jobs were not like horrible or anything, you know, I mean, this was not like I was, you know, performing something that was that was really, really undesirable. It was just like the more and more that I developed in my career, the more I realized that something wasn't right. Like, you know, here I am, this top performer. When I was selling metal, my manager even said something to me. I was a top performer there. And he's like, Matt, you know, I mean, it was a big problem. He was like, no one likes you. Like you can't demand this level of excellence out of everybody else. You know, I love it. It's making us a lot of money, but you can't be like that. And I think there are signs like that. Like, I should have known that there was something. That was a big sign that I was capable of more. Entrepreneurs are capable of more. People that want to go above and beyond are people that desire excellence and are getting yelled at work for desiring it from other people who aren't able to get it. But, you know, trauma held me back. Like, I just didn't, the more I kept advancing in my career, the more this trauma presented itself and like, didn't allow me to believe in myself. You know, I mean, the older I got, the more it was like, I have to buy a house now. I have to save more, retirement's around the corner. And it's really important to listen to those warning signs, to pay attention. And when people are giving you compliments, like, hey, like, you know, you're doing a really good job at this, you know, creative part of the job. Ask questions. Like, really? Like, what makes me stand out? And, you know, as I've gone through my career, I'm in a place now where I'm starting a consulting agency, coaching agency, helping other entrepreneurs right now learn what I had to learn the hard way and learn my value and advocate for myself, set boundaries. So I don't have any regrets in my career, I would say. I'm just really glad that along the way I've listened to the warning signs and started to learn to listen to myself more and get myself into a place that's making me truly, truly happy, where work does not feel like pain.
So you are, I mean, just correct me if I'm wrong, but you were successful in an industry that maybe you didn't love, right? And there was, you said pain, but is that accurate? Like, you were successful, but it wasn't doing it for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you probably, sounds like you kind of thought maybe that's normal. Maybe that's just, I got to feel the pain. Like, work's not supposed to be fun. I mean, it is what it is. And then maybe there was a realization that I can make money and be successful, but I can also love what I do.
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of living for tomorrow. And I think as I've been healing, that's one thing that's really changed, is it's like, I mean, we are not guaranteed tomorrow. I mean, we all know this, but like, I've learned to actually put that into practice and to care about that. Life is too short to be unhappy doing something. And the more that I've seen that I can be happy in other areas of my life, the more that I'm seeing that I also have the ability to be happy at work too. And like you said, it's not like it was overly undesirable. It was just, I mean, it was just not aligned with what I have been called for. And
yeah. So let's get into that, because that's a big thing that comes up consistently in my podcast is you said, I wasn't aligned for what I was called for. I don't think those are words or concepts that younger adults getting into the career world of careers for the first time, or maybe in their late 20s, early 30s, whatever. I don't think they think like that, right? Like, I think a lot of times they're thinking about what their mom and dad want them to do, or what social media thinks they want them to do, or maybe they're thinking about a new car or getting an apartment or maybe a down payment for a house or what looks good, right? So I guess, do you have any thoughts on trying to get in the head of somebody that might not be thinking clear? Maybe it's trauma. Maybe they have an unhealthy attachment to money. Maybe they think the only way they can be successful is to be really rich. Any thoughts like on helping people? Because I think I battled a lot with money, right? I thought if I'm not super wealthy, then I'm a failure, right? And that was my dad. And I think that's a form of trauma. And I'm not playing the victim, but I think a lot of voices really detour people from where they should go. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, for me, like, I approach this pretty pragmatically. Like, life does cost money. And I think that it's a little unrealistic for someone to think, hey, I want to, be an artist and paint photos and sell them for millions of dollars. You're going to have to put in some hard work to make that happen. The best way I know how to balance both, to balance paying your bills and to balance being able to pursue what it is you like, is by saving money and being responsible with it and really focusing on that long-term goal. One of the ways that I've really discovered this new journey for myself in terms of wanting to help and mentor and coach people is through investing in myself over the past few years. I hired a writing coach a few years ago. I decided I wanted to try writing a book. And through that, I realized this whole creative side. I mean, it's really quite sad that like 3.5 years ago, I would have told you I don't have a creative bone in my body. And here I am writing a book, believing that it could possibly be a New York Times bestselling memoir. That's the power that happens from exposure to things.
Yep.
Like, it's when you have negativity all around you, you're not going to be able to be too positive. You got to get yourself out of that to get around people who inspire you, people who have done the things that you're questioning whether or not you're capable of doing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to kind of unpack. I'm thinking, can you give me an idea, like 4 or 5 flavors of like your coaching, I would think is you're attracted to people. You want to help people, but I think what you're really after is maybe trying to help people that are experiencing trauma and trauma is holding them back. Is that accurate?
Yes. Trauma and limiting beliefs. I would say that all of us are holding on to something from childhood that is preventing us from living an abundant life. I think some of us have started the healing journeys. And a lot of it for me was like realizing nothing horribly horrific happened to me. And it might even just be like small things. Maybe somebody said something to you when you were 6 years old and it was never discussed. And it's just really made you think like something negative about the world. And it could be a lot bigger than that too, but a big part of my story and my success has been letting go of these limiting beliefs and surrounding myself with people that could help me, coaches, doctors, mentors, to believe and to have exposure to this life that I had in my dreams. I'm able to see it in real life. I'm able to see people that are making tons of money, that are not working. Some people I know work 10 hours a week and make millions of dollars. This is possible. If you can dream it, you can make it happen. But you're not going to make it happen if you don't get yourself around the people who are doing those types of things.
Yeah. So exposure to those people, but also, I mean, you got to get clear, like internally, right? I mean, you can be around super successful people, but if you have the wrong mindset, right? I don't know how far that's going to go.
No, absolutely. It's all part of the equation. For me, I've been in therapy most of my adult life, coaching as well. I read a lot. I do a lot of learning on my own and prioritize my health. And a big part of my life has been overuse of alcohol, marijuana, and it's never gotten out of hand or anything, but I'll tell you right now, as I am starting this new chapter of my life and taking care of my body better than ever, there isn't much that I think I can't do right now. Mind is very clear and confidence is very strong and I'm having a good time.
I love it. Let's talk to the, and maybe we talked about this before, I don't know, The Big Leap. And didn't you say you had that book?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you talk about limiting beliefs, can you maybe elaborate for the audience who's not aware of what that means, but give them some examples? It doesn't have to be your limiting beliefs, but explain that whole term and what it means.
I'm going to center this around money, probably. I think it's pretty resonant to most people. Limiting beliefs around money is, I came from a family. My dad earned $110,000 and always talked about how much money that was and to be grateful for it. Well, I mean, $110,000 is not what it was 5 years ago, let alone 30 years ago. And, further exploring money, I thought money was bad. That was something that was a big part of my childhood. I was always like this entrepreneur kid, and I was out, helping the neighbors, helping my grandparents with chores. And I'd come home and my dad would be angry that my brothers didn't get the same amount of money that I did for doing nothing. He just thought that like it should have been split three ways or something. And I don't really harbor any animosity about it, but at the same time, like, that absolutely affected me. Like, it wasn't until I was, 32 years old and finally told a coach that, like, I don't think that it's okay to want money. Then she's like, what? Like, okay, like, this is what we're going to work on now.
Yeah. Money, man, it's such a powerful thing.
The more you have, like, the way that I believe money now, well, I mean, I am really proud of my relationship with money. Like, I've made a lot. I can tell you that there's not much I couldn't buy at $500,000 a year that I could buy at $1 million a year. I don't need that. Money does not buy happiness. For me, it buys security. But like money, the more that you have, the more you're able to impact if you're a decent person. You know, you're able to share it with people. You're able to offer your neighbor money if they need something. I mean, there's no money is here to dance with us. That's a quote that I learned on my healing journey from financial trauma. And it just made so much sense. It comes and goes. And the people that I admire, like they're people that don't, I mean, you need to have the minimal amount to be safe, but like there's some good years and there's some bad years. And that's the mentality, I think, to approach money. It's not all linear.
Money is here to dance with us.
Money is here to dance with us.
It's interesting. I've never heard that. There's a lot of money. I keep going back to, okay, people are watching and they're like, huh, interesting. Like, I don't think young people think like this, but like, I think about like a lot of times I stress out about money, right? And I know that my kids see that. My son has said many times about how I talk about money a lot. And so in a way, I mean, I could see him growing up and maybe chasing after a career and trying to be really rich so he doesn't have to like those feelings that he experienced as a young boy when his dad was stressed. He might think that doesn't feel safe, so he needs to be really wealthy to feel safe or something. I'm kind of alive, but I think it's interesting for people that are watching this that might think, huh, this is not the typical podcast, is to kind of think about like what shaped your lens of like, why are you wanting to go to Wall Street, or why are you wanting to be a doctor or a lawyer? Is it really what you want to do, or are you pursuing something based off of someone else's definition of success? But money is a big part of my life. I don't want to say unfortunately, because I think money buys a lot of freedom. And like you said, you can do a lot of nice things with money in terms of giving back. But it's such a big part of the decision of why people do what they do.
I totally agree with you. And yeah, money's a big part of my life. And I would say, I don't want to say unfortunately, but a little bit unfortunately.
Yeah.
And what I would say, I mean, I'm very well-versed and clear of what's going on in the economy, the cost of living, how hard it is for 20-year-olds right now, 30-year-olds. I don't know that the opportunity to buy a home is anywhere near the way it is for that generation as it was for mine. And I really empathize and sympathize for that in a lot of ways. And some practical advice on that is really think about what you want in life. I used to live in Manhattan and I was shocked. Like, even really wealthy people rent homes. You know, it's just kind of the way it is. Some people buy, but like, we won't get into that. But renting makes a lot of sense in Manhattan. It makes a lot of, I mean, right now, a lot of economists are actually saying that renting makes more sense than buying a home. This is kind of really new information. So ask yourself that. Like, what do you really want for your life? There are so many tools. There's financial advisors out there that can really help you understand what you need to achieve those goals. And one thing that, like, my career and my financial success has been driven by scarcity at an unhealthy level. And at the same time, it's bought some freedom, but it's not the way I live my life anymore. And we really need to, like, right now, like, I mean, I live in California and I'm kind of surprised by this, but like, this has never crossed my mind before, but I'm like, huh, like, you know, living in a less expensive state, like, what would that mean for my stress levels? What would that mean for other things? Like, these are things that I'm contemplating. Like, there's a lot of options out there. And like, you know, before going to Wall Street, like, really understand that's like a 16-hour a day job, like, with a lot of chaos. Like, is that really what you want?
The other thing you I think would be good for the audience to know about you that you said earlier was, and you're not the only guest I've had that has said this, is, you know, you worked hard, you put money away, you were smart, you saved, but it's given you kind of a cushion or a nest egg to kind of pursue a side, not a side hustle, but a passion, right? The coaching, wanting to help people maybe that have gone or being held back with trauma. And I think that's where your heart lies, right? And that might not really be possible unless you had previously had experienced success financially and had a money to kind of like subsidize this new career, right? Am I wrong?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's right.
I would say yes, but like the main work is like the main abundance that I have that's allowing me to pursue this is the emotional abundance. Like I think they say executive functioning, you know, like I'm using my executive functioning very well. Like I'm running two businesses simultaneously. Like I'm building one while building the other. So there's not really been a huge financial risk. It's been more the belief that I can pursue something and give it a shot. And I mean, I know it's going to work out. I mean, everyone's so excited. Who doesn't want to, you know, get help as an entrepreneur to learn their value and increase their prices? I mean, everyone wants to maximize their revenue opportunities. And I think it's just, I think what I have learned is much more the emotional abundance and believing that the world is not scarce.
Can you elaborate? What do you, I mean, I think I know what you mean, but like, the world is not scarce. What exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, no, I mean, thank you for that. Like the way that I think about this, it's like, how many clients do you need? 30, 300, 300,000, 3 million? There's 8 billion people in the world. Like think about like a company like Coca-Cola. I mean, even them, like how many people, like they're, I'm just making this up, but they're not even, the majority of the world is not drinking Coca-Cola every day. You know, I mean, you're really only trying to sell your product or service to a very small, small, tiny, minuscule percentage of the world. And when you think about it that way, like there's trillions of dollars of wealth. What do you want to make? You know, $1 million, 2 million? Anything is possible.
And yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, though. I mean, I'm thinking like even in my own business, like, so, you know, I, the way I pay the bills, I'm in the mortgage industry, and a lot of my business and success has been on establishing relationships with referral partners, people, financial planners, CPAs, realtors, divorce attorneys. And it's funny. I'm in this group of some of the top guys and gals in the country, and they're like gung ho, right? They're like trying to change the world. They're trying to like, and I'm motivated, but I'm not like trying to change the world. Like I'm trying to be a good dad and a good husband, and I don't want to be fat. So I work out, I want to have fun. I try to be well-rounded. But it's, for me, it's like, I just need like 6 or 7 really good partners. Like some of these guys have 50, 60 agents. And I'm like, you can make a living off of, you don't have to take over the world to, be successful. Like you can have a niche, you know what I mean? And I feel like when you're talking, that's kind of what I'm thinking is like, sometimes you think you have to blow the world up to be like spectacular, but you don't necessarily need to do that. I guess it depends on your industry or your career, but, I don't know, maybe I'm rambling, but I feel like that's an interesting point you made.
It's about the planning, I mean, somebody said this to me, like it was at a company I worked for, and she's like, ASAP is not a date, and this is kind of like the same thing, like, saving endless amounts of money is not a goal. Like, when you decide your end goal or like a goal that you have for 5 years, I set monthly, weekly, quarterly, yearly goals. It makes it so much easier because you're able to set yourself goals that are attainable. Like if you want to, travel the world, then yeah, you only need that 6 or 7 clients, perhaps. You're spending 3 months in a, third world country where living is so much less expensive and Airbnb being at your house in, California or whatever.
Yeah.
You need to reverse engineer these things and it makes it a lot easier.
So getting back kind of into your new endeavor, how do you identify, like, how are you finding people that might have experienced trauma are being held back? So like, I think you're an interesting example for somebody is, okay, listen, you sold steel, you sold baby products, you were good at it. Maybe you weren't in love with it. It wasn't like you went to bed dreaming of steel and baby products, but you were good. You were good in sales and you utilized your skill sets and you made money. But now your heart's kind of playing a bigger role and you're now wanting to give back. And maybe you're trying to like, I want to go help these people with what I dealt with. How are you finding? And the reason I ask it this way is because I think there's a lot of careers or jobs that lead you to something else, right? Like you might just want to be an author and you want to write about something, but like you're an example of someone that kind of played the game, did, whatever, made money, was good at it. And now you kind of are brave enough and now you're going down a totally different road and you want to kind of go help people like you that, were struggling back in the day. How do you build that kind of business?
So I would say it's, it's going to be sales and marketing, and that's what I'm doing. I'm in this branding, this personal branding firm I work with, and they teach us how to do this in a very clear, frameworked way. But it's, so it's two parts, it's out here talking on podcasts. It's out speaking in front of live audiences. I am active on social media. I'm looking to be a lot more active, starting my own podcast, starting a YouTube channel soon, hopefully. And amongst that, I'm spreading the word. I mean, just every day I'm chiseling out time to reach out to people, new people, friends, asking for referrals, and just really trying to make an impact on people's life. Right now I'm in a place where I'm not necessarily in a rush to monetize things. I'm really just trying to make an impact with people and to build a business. It takes time, And I think like what I learned about building a business my prior time, it's a lot less fun when it's not driven out of scarcity. When you're just out here like having a good time and customers are coming, clients are coming. And it's, but it's like, I think it all goes down to strategy and methodology. Like I'm no better than anybody else out there. I, love to procrastinate. I love to, mine's funny now. It's kind of disguised. It's like this fake procrastination. It's like, I'm doing busy work that is important, but it's not as important as like the important thing. And
yep.
Creating systems, I wake up very early. I wake up at 4 a.m, go to bed at 8, but it's a lot about like, if you're determined to do something, you'll get the help and learn from people that have done it before. And I'm disciplined and strategic and and doing what you do when you have your eye on a prize.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too. And it's interesting because whether it's like somebody that wants to be an influencer or someone that wants to play music and be noticed and create whatever, like you are going through the steps, the phases right now to kind of be heard, be seen, get your name out there, and you're gritty, right? You're spending, you're getting up early, going to bed early. And you're kind of doing, it's like, you're doing everything, right? You're just trying to figure out how do I get momentum, right? And again, whether it's coaching or whether it's something totally different, I think people sometimes get stalled because they don't know what hard work is. And it's not always fun work. It's not always like, you know, there's not always a return on investment. Like it takes a while. And it sounds like you're kind of doing it all right now. And who knows what the most effective way is to build this business for yourself, but you're kind of like putting yourself out there, it sounds like.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, the good thing is like when you have a little bit of a cushion, you're able to hire people. So I have helped doing a lot of the things that are, you know, I mean, it's a business. You got to be smart about it. I have some help doing things that are easily trainable, but like the top of the food chain stuff, the hard stuff, I need to do myself. I don't, you know, I'm a firm believer that with marketing, you got to be your own marketer for the first, you know, whatever it might be, year or 2 years, but you got to like really be out there and deciding the vision for your company. Having worked with a lot of entrepreneurs, like the value of marketing is not something that everyone understands. And I think it's honestly 10 times more important today than it was a year ago, even. Like, yeah. You need to be like, when somebody asks you like what your brand is about, you need to be the one to answer that question. And, you know, but it is it's a lot of discipline that's required, but it's so much fun when you're doing something. Like I've never had this much fun in my whole life. And I think that's what's really what I'm here to, you know, share, like living in your zone of genius. This area that you're just able to be excellent at something and do something better than anybody else, where it's not feeling painful. Like the pain is a challenge. It's a nice pressure almost. That's when, like, it does not feel like pain. And, you know, it's funny. Like, I mean, if you look at some of my first like reels on Instagram, whew, they are like, they're rough, you know? And I mean, several of them were, and I'm still not perfect at it by any means, but you got to just be okay being bad at something. Mm. And
yeah, I think it's interesting. I'm listening and I'm trying to articulate it in my own words, but like when you're running a race that you actually want to win, it's a different kind of race. Like, you know, I'm really good in lending. I would do a loan with me. I care, I work hard, but there's just so many people that do what I do. And so it's hard to differentiate yourself, right? It's hard to feel special sometimes because people just want the rate, low fees. And, you know, people are stressed. Buying homes can be stressful, refinancing, building. So for me, like when I do this podcast, I feel like, all right, at least I feel more alive because I'm like, I can be a smart ass. I'm a good listener. I'm sensitive. I'm all the things that God gave me or what I was born in this world. I feel like I'm good in conversation, and I'm naturally interested in careers because I love to see what kind of motivates people and what separates people. And I'm always kind of like, huh, I wonder why that guy is so good at what he does or that gal. But like you used a word, I forgot what it was, but it's different. It's a different kind of feeling and it kind of carries you, right? You don't get exhausted and you don't burn out. And like, that's what I hope for my audience is I'm not just trying to educate them on what a career is. I'm trying to get them to think about what the hell they should be doing. So they're not running a race they don't want to win. Cause you know, and it's not about winning. You got to, but you know, like when you're in it and you're digging it, that's a difference.
Absolutely. I think that's what, you said it. It's just like, it's something that you enjoy doing every day that, I mean, and it takes trial and error, you know, I mean, it does. If you're fortunate where, you know, maybe your parents have a cushion that they're allowing you to, you know, to make some errors on their, I mean, on their money. That's great. That speeds things up a little bit. But the call is like that it should feel exciting to you to go to work. And it just, it should feel fun. Like, I mean, there's been parts of my career that have been fun. A lot of it has been the people I've been around. And I think that it's like, you need to know when to fold them. You need to know when it's time to move on, like, and just like try something new. And I think that, you know, someone said this to me a while ago, but it's like, when you're not motivated anymore, like he wasn't motivated and he is like, it's just time for me to leave. And he was, and he left his job without another job, because of that. And, that really set a good example, you know, I mean, and I'm thinking about like my career and like, you know, if like 6 months off without a paycheck coming in, if that meant like complete fulfillment the rest of my entire life, like when you do the math on that, I mean, it's not too unattractive.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the catch, the flip side of that is if you wait too long, it's harder to get out. Like, you know, if you have a family and you have responsibilities and, you know, it's not easy when you're, you know, 50 years old to like do a 180 and, you know, change careers if you don't have the financial ability to do that. So again, it's advice to the younger audience is think about these things sooner than later, before you meet somebody, before you're married, before you have a mortgage, before you're right. Because the longer you get down a road with a company or whatever, you know, they like at Microsoft, a lot of my friends in the technology world, they call them golden handcuffs with the stock options. Like it's just, you kind of, it's like, you can't leave, you know, or you can, but you're walking away from something. So, is there anything, I know it's funny, this podcast, you and I, this hasn't really been specific to, you know, any type of career, but I kind of like the conversation because I think it's making me think I might want to mix in more general conversations within my career podcast, you know, where you're talking about this and that, and then have ones like this where we're really just kind of shooting the shit on just advice. Is there anything that like I haven't asked you that you feel inclined to share or any advice that you think the audience, again, my audience is younger. I mean, my audience is all of the above, but for people that are trying to figure out their life, anything you might want to say to that group?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I would imagine that everyone listening is a higher performer than average, you know, if they're taking the time to listen to a podcast like this. And I think, you know, I met with my coach this morning and she said to me something. She's like, you don't realize like what a unique individual you are. We were talking about taking feedback and just how I'm always open to learning. And I mean, I'm not the smartest person in the room. I mean, I went to a college, it's good, but I didn't go to like an Ivy League school by any means. And I think that like any of you that are high performing and curious about fulfillment, have it in your ability to achieve fulfillment. And it might be a gradual place. It might be a stepping stone. But like for me, you know, starting a consulting business is very, it's not capital heavy at all. you know, as a mortgage lender, you know, I mean, these are businesses that you can do, like you're providing services, you know, it's not like you're being asked to go out and buy $1 million of inventory to sell. And I think entrepreneurship is the path that a lot more people should take. Dirk, you mentioned like even in your 50s. Yeah, I mean, the fact is it is a little bit harder to get hired somewhere, but you're smarter and you're well positioned to start your own business at that point. And you've seen a lot of things. And I just invite everyone to think like none of us are trapped. And the only thing that's changed with me over the past 5 years is I just have a much better and more confident mindset that I agree that I can do whatever I set my mind to, and it's going to take discipline, and I'm capable of that too. And I mean, I'm sitting here telling you, I've never worked longer days in my entire life than I have the past few weeks. And like, I've never felt more fulfilled either.
You said something that I thought I wanted to kind of bring up. None of us are trapped. And I thought about like, you know, I've done a lot of meditation and mind stuff, and even like medicine journey kind of stuff. And I feel like I'm not challenging you on this, but I feel like I have a coach and she's always like, I language, Dirk, you know, don't say we, say I feel that, I am trapped often by my thinking, the way I think. And I think about like, when you say we're not trapped, I think a lot of people are trapped by, you know, thinking they're not good enough, they're not worthy enough. They, you know, I grew up in a small town. Why the hell would, you know, anyone want to hear what I have to say? I had a, you know, an alcoholic dad that was, you know, blue collar or whatever. I don't know. But I feel like a lot of, if my goal in this podcast is to help people live better lives by choosing careers smarter, that are more in alignment with who they are, I feel like if there was one big hindrance to that is the way people think about their career and about themselves. So I would say that I think people are trapped, not physically like trapped, but like the way they think, I think traps them.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, no disagreement on that, you know, and I've been there, you know, and just to be very clear, I mean that very compassionately. I absolutely have felt trapped for most of my life. And what I've learned is that there are ways out, and, you know, for most people there are ways out, and it took me 37 years to figure that out, and $100,000 of therapy. And but I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, like we need to improve on our mindsets the best we can, you know, and I don't think we're all created equal in that department. I think some of us are, you know, are struggling more than others, and depending on those limiting beliefs can make it even harder. But I think that we can continuously make progress on that.
Yeah. Again, I'm not trying to get too deep, but another thing that you just said that made me think is I always kind of battle, and I don't know if I said the name Victor Mate Mighty. I'll send you a link on him. He's a very interesting guy. He's been on a ton of podcasts, like all the podcasts. And he's big on victim. Like, you know, he talks a lot about childhood trauma. And I always get a little friction inside because I'm a big Joe Dispenza fan, and Joe's a lot about creating what you want, like through your thoughts and your beliefs and manifesting. And then he's all about, you know, a lot of these people like ADHD, there's no such, it's just trauma. And then so like the whole, and people who play the victim card versus the person who just says, screw it, that's not who I am. I'm going to move on from that. So like, there's this weird dance between when it's a legitimate victim, legitimate trauma, versus the person who just says, I'm going to, you know, create my own world regardless of what happened to me when I was like, I don't know what I'm saying. I think hopefully you can understand what I'm trying to articulate, but I kind of battle between sometimes thinking, stop being a victim, right? You know, stop being associated with all the trauma and identifying yourself with that, because that's kind of like who you think you are, but that's not who you are. That's your past. Like, do you have any thoughts on somebody that might be battling with trauma and maybe they're kind of almost addicted to it, which is not allowing them to move on?
I have the utmost of compassion and empathy for that person. You know, I mean, I think that, I mean, this is a whole nother topic, but yeah, I mean, I think that we all are victims at it. Like, things happen, you know. There was this phrase that I heard that just changed my life. It's not your fault what happens to you, but it's your responsibility to heal. And when I heard that like 5, 6, 7 years ago or something, I just was floored, absolutely floored. I've never seen anybody heal. I've seen a lot of victims. I've seen a lot of people that, have suffered from trauma, something that's happened, and they've taken it out on other people because they didn't heal themselves. I mean, there's definitely been parts of my life where I have been, I played the victim. I don't love the way that sounds. I mean, but I've done it, you know. I mean, you're the victim until you get help getting out. I don't believe that many of us can do that on our own. I think that it does. There's a lot of compassion. I have for anybody in that place, because it's, I don't know that it's possible at all to do it on your own. You need,
and that's what you're trying to do, right? Help people.
Yeah. I'm one part of the piece, you know, but this is a, you know, I mean, for me, one of the biggest things that I've had to do in my life is being open with friends and like being honest about like, hey, like I'm not feeling good right now. Like, are you upset with me? Like, this is why this made me feel this way, or really having these vulnerable conversations. I have shame, you know, explaining the shame I have. And that's probably been the most impactful thing for me in terms of like getting out of the victim role, talking about it, airing it, shining light on it.
So as we wind this down, one thing that you said is, what would you say, like the distinction, you say you're a consultant. In my mind, I feel like you're going down the coaching route, but there's a difference, right, between a coach and a consultant.
Yeah. So really what I'm offering right now is my main offer to clients is a mastermind group. So I'm taking a group of entrepreneurs who are feeling like they're, you know, they're high performers, they're looking to increase their prices, set better boundaries, get a team built, compassionately lead people and honor their needs for fulfillment in this business. This is really for people who are like, you are doing well, you know, I mean, the business is going well, but it's really the mindset that's holding you back and just a lot of unworthiness, you know, like I don't deserve this success. If I don't do it myself, it's not going to get done right. So it's helping people like that. So I would say that really it's a mix of coaching that I'm offering along with like some practical business advice. I worked with dozens and dozens of entrepreneurial companies and helping you navigate that and grow the business and get yourself out of the weeds. I mean, that's my biggest accomplishment almost, is that I've, you know, taken this business that was swallowing me, my consulting business, to where I hired help. I got myself out of the weeds. And really aligned my offering to my clients with the sales efforts that are naturally, I mean, there was a time when I was like doing compliance work and just like this stuff that like my brain does not work that way, you know? And The more that I get myself on that path of doing the things that I'm naturally good at, my blood pressure is lowered and I sleep better and I'm happier and I've made more money and had more freedom.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, I'm battling a little bit just even on this podcast. It's fun for me, but I don't know how to grow it. And I do believe like I wrote a book years ago on road rage. It's called Road Rage Justified. And I wasn't justifying road rage, but it was a kind of a comical, funny, every page had a rule that you shouldn't do, right? And like, you know, don't drive in the fast lane. Even if you're going 100, if someone's going 105, get the hell over. So it was very, you know, and I, you know, I wasn't racist or, I mean, I had probably more white male depictions, but I, you know, I had every kind of person there was, and, you know, and I had 50 things you shouldn't do while driving. And cause I'm opinionated, I don't have road rage, but I can get angry. But like, I thought that book would just like, and I did like 100 radio interviews across the country with all the rock star DJs. And it was fun. I would talk to people and people would call in. But like, for me, I struggle with this podcast is I feel like it's good content. I'm just trying to figure out how the hell to get it seen by the masses. Like, and I feel like the younger college, high school, career center people, that's my audience. So you know, you said something like, I can relate to that because I think what I'm really good at is just the content and the conversations, but I don't know how the hell to build this thing. And maybe offline one of these days, you and I can chat about it. And maybe this brand group that you're part of could be helpful. But I do believe in it. I just don't, you know, I want more people to see it. I want to grow it.
I think it's like a strategy, you know, I mean, and it's, you know, it's going to be some hard work at the beginning. You know, one of the things the branding group says, you either have time or you have money. And if you have neither, you're doing something wrong. Okay. And I like that.
Yeah, no, I get it. But I'm interested because I need help. I'm being vulnerable. I need help because I don't know how to build the audience, but I feel like if it, I do believe, I mean, there's a lot of things I suck at that I think that I'm not good at, but I think this is something I could really grow into something. So maybe we can talk about that another time. Is there anything before I end this? Is there anything you want to say, any more advice or anything you want to tell the audience that you think might be helpful?
No, I think I've covered it. I'm just going to comment on your last, topic right now. I mean, you being open to help is 99% of the battle. I mean, think about how many tens of thousands of people have been in your seat right now that have figured this out. If they can do it, you can do it. And that's really, That's what I remind myself every day. It's the people that don't want the help that can't see the label through the bottle, I think is what they say. I just heard this recently. But yeah, I mean, being open to help, there's tons of people out there with good ideas that have done this before. They're not always expensive either. I mean, I heard this, I think, on a Tim Ferriss podcast a few weeks ago. If you want to know how to do something like really good, if you were to go on LinkedIn and message some executive, some high up person and say, hey, can I have I'm an hour of your time for $1,000? They'll say yes, probably. $1,000 is, even for people that are wealthy, that's a very fair rate. And I thought about that. Like, it's stepping outside of the comfort zone. Like, when I moved to New York, that's what I learned. I mean, it is absolutely true when they say you'll either, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. But like, there's no job. I mean, there's no applying for jobs online. You have to get yourself through a back door and get yourself in front of that person. If there's 100 people applying for a job, you need to stand out. And it's finagling through life and finding people, going the back door. But you can figure this out. I'll give you some input on mine.
I'm confident. I know I will. I just, I've been so focused on just getting to 100 and then kind of like, what the hell do I got? And, I'm up for like improving or whatever. But I want to pursue this as far as I can and see what happens. But Matt, I appreciate it, man. You've been great. I'm excited for you and your next chapter. And, I think the audience, this is a different flavor of a podcast for me. But I got a lot out of it, and I'm sure the audience did too. So thank you.
Thank you very much.